Yesterday, I was given a juicy, juicy what if. And it came from the guy who joins us right now, the great Connor Hughes, who, what? What?
Can you just do the read?
Can I just do an intro for him? I'll get to the read. Don't you worry.
The supposed to be in the intro.
Okay, take care.
You have the read.
I don't have anything.
Anyhow, I hand it to you.
Don't have it. Anyhow, joining us right now, the great Connor Hughes covers the Jets and Giants of SNY. Connor, I'm going to let you tell the story because it's your news. It's your information.
Yeah.
Can you tell the people the what ifs on how Malik Nabers maybe wouldn't have been a New York Giant and maybe Sean Morash would be besmirching his name because he wouldn't be wearing blue, he'd be wearing a different color. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is like new news, but it's one of those things where it's weird. How, you can actually blame Sean. Like Sean brought all this back and made this whole big news story on a slow Wednesday, slow Tuesday, whenever you guys had that debate, and it brought a chance. So it's like, I remember seeing it. It was a fascinating, because we talked about it on a Final Drive too. Like, it's a great debate over the playmaker thing and then Garrett or Malik. But I remember, like, if you recall, I forget the medium that it came out in, but it was during that draft mentioned how the Jets were one of the teams that called up with the Giants exploring the possibility of trading up in the NFL draft. Like, the Jets called them to see if it was possible to get up there in the draft. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, I wonder if that was for a quarterback. Like, could it have been for JJ? Could it have been for Bo Nix? Could it have been for Penix? Like, could it have been for a passer? Could the future behind it? Like, what were we looking at here? And so I remember making my calls to the people over at the Jets, and they were like, no, that wasn't for a quarterback. No, we didn't want a quarterback. We were going to try to trade up, and if we were able to get up there with the Giants, we were going to take Malik Nabers. And the reasoning for it, because I remember they told me, I was like, holy cow. Like, because at that point, if you remember, Malik was he was not necessarily considered that draft to be the number one receiver. Everybody and their uncle, but from the media perspective, it was Marvin Harrison Jr. That was the guy. It was Marvin Harrison Jr. The Jets actually had Malik as their number one receiver. The Giants had Malik as their number one receiver. And this, I mean, with the Giants, you can say, oh, they got their number one guy. But the Jets, they have no reason to lie to me about this. Like, they had Malik as their number one because the way that they described it to me was that when you evaluated Marvin Harrison, you saw a guy that every single year had the potential to be an 80 to 90 catch, 1,200 yards, 6 to 8 touchdown guy. Like, that's what you were going to get. Just a professional NFL receiver that was going to be good year after year after year. When they evaluated Malik, and there were absolutely red flags on Malik coming out because there were questions about his practice habits. There were questions about if he was not involved early in games, how would he react late in games? The little things along those lines that were little bugaboos on Malik. But when you looked at him from a talent perspective, what the Jets saw is that this was not a player that had the potential to be one of the best in the NFL. This was a player who had the potential to be the best receiver in the NFL, period. He would be 1-1. He would be up there with Ja'Marr Chase as just an elite level prospect. And they saw an opportunity to go up there. They still had Aaron Rodgers at the time. Get Malik, have Garrett Wilson, and now have a legit 1-2 punch there at receiver for the next several seasons.
Yeah, I remember the idea.
And the Giants said no.
Right.
The Giants just said no.
I remember the story, I think it was on Hard Knocks, that the Jets were reaching out, but there was never like firmness on who they were reaching out for.
Yeah, they wanted Malik.
Yeah,
they wanted Malik.
So let me ask you this, because they ended up obviously staying at 11 and they drafted Olu Fashanu. Did they end up doing the right thing? Because it would have kind of changed our view of the offensive line if they're not drafting Olu Fashanu that year.
Yeah. Now, the one thing I'll say, Ev, is that I never got into the weeds of what the Giants or what the Jets were willing to offer, because from my understanding, the conversation was a quick one. Like, the Jets want, or the Giants wanted Nabers, so it wasn't like they got down to it in terms of, if you remember last year before they drafted Dart, they were in the thick of negotiating. The Giants were, and putting offers forward to the Titans to try to go up there and be able to draft Cam Ward 1 overall. Like, the Giants were trying to do that. Actually, there was a point there at the NFL Combine where it seemed like that was going to happen, and then things kind of fell apart, and the Titans decided, no, we kind of want Cam Ward for ourselves. I never got the vibe that it got that far as, you know, the Jets were like, hey, we're going to give you this, this, and this, and also this. Like, it never got that far. It was kind of shut down. But I think if you look at it, it probably it wasn't a terrible consolation prize for the Jets because they were able to keep whatever draft assets they were going to have to move up there to be able to select Malik Nabers. They got an offensive tackle that they believe is going to be a mainstay on their offensive line for the next decade plus. They still re-signed Garrett Wilson. Now you have A.D. Mitchell. You ended up drafting Omar Cooper later, and you still have this. Now it's a completely different regime, but you have a ton of draft picks next year where if you still want to add another receiver, you can do it next year in a really talent-rich class. But yeah, it's a fascinating thing because I think when I heard Sean's debate, and then it was like, I caught clips of it. Like, I caught Sean, I think what you guys tweeted out there of like Sean basically jumping out of his seat and screaming and like his head turning red. Like, I caught that from Sean. I didn't, like, did the debate originally begin the Giants have better playmakers than the Jets?
No,
is that
no.
how it started?
Hold on. I'm going to get to how it started in a second. But first, Evan.
Yeah, Connor's in the window seat. Brought to you by Windorama. Save up to 40% on new windows and doors.
So, Connor, just a quick abbreviated version. We had a conversation about the Jets and expectations, and I expect the Jets to not be a great football team this year. And
Evan, that's fair. Yeah.
Evan put the percentage at there is a 20% chance the Jets win 8 games.
Yeah.
Which
set me off. By the way, I think the Jets...
I don't think that's asinine.
Okay, well, that's where we disagree.
So 20, if you're telling me 50% or 60%, I'd be like, all right, let's brill it in a little bit. But 20%, you're saying, look, if you get good Geno for 18 weeks, like, you could do that. Like, I think you could do that. Their schedule isn't ridiculous. But again, it's very reliant on getting good Geno.
Of course.
Like, you need to have good Geno.
And that's my point. You're not going to get good Geno.
That's the thing that made Jet fans so upset. Anyone who was listening, because there's a different context between listening and the clips and all that, and I get it. I think the Jets were a 4-5 win team, which is probably the majority of people. I can't rule out that things go great and they win 8 games. Sean was arrogant enough to say, there's no chance of that happening. It can't happen. And I'm like, dude, I'll give it a 20% chance. So thank you for at least co-signing that I'm not
put it this way,
rational monster.
I could have more of a sane conversation with Connor painting that picture than you.
That's because he's better looking than me. That's all that is.
Now, Connor, outside of the big if, which I don't buy into, Geno Smith kind of being old Geno Smith, is there a path without Geno Smith absolutely clicking like his prime Seattle time to this team, you know, having a surprising year? Is there reasons to believe on this defense? We obviously know they can be deep with the upside of weapons, but like outside of Geno Smith, what's the other reason to believe in that this could get to 8 wins?
Well, it's mostly offense related. It's that the offense should be fun. They should. I mean, the offensive line is as good as it's been probably since 2015, I remember, which is, you know, coincidentally, the last time this team had a winning season. So it's probably as good as it's been in 2015. I'd say the upside this year is even better. They have the 1-2-3 punch at running back with Breece and Braylon and Isaiah. Now they have what looks like 3 legitimate receivers, at a minimum one real legit receiver in Garrett Wilson, and then A.D. Mitchell, who they like a lot, and a rookie that you're banking on some upside, even though you haven't seen it until recently in training camp. But still, that is a first-round talent in Omar Cooper that you draft. You've got Kenyon Sadiq and Mason Taylor. I mean, there's a lot of things to look at. And then a quarterback, by the way, who should be aggressive. Conceivably, that's what you're going to get with Geno. So he's going to be able to utilize these weapons in a way that Justin Fields was scared to and Aaron Rodgers was too timid to do. So that's why you think the offense is going to be good and why I'm kind of leaning more towards that 20% when, honestly, guys, if you had asked me before camp, I'd probably have laughed, just like Sean did. But having watched training camp, and I split time between Jets, Giants, but having watched training camp, especially those joint practices with the Bucks, the defense, while they absolutely have their warts, and I absolutely have reservations about what their ceiling is, we've seen indications that they are going to be going 100 miles per hour on every single snap. They're going to be extremely feisty, and they're going to embrace playing dirty. Means of, like, just ugly football. Not dirty, like, taking cheap shots. Like, they're just going to embrace being ugly. And I think that when you have a defense like that that's just going to drag the opposition into the deep end and be like, hey, look, we love being out here. Let's see if you can swim. I think they can surprise some people, and if their offense and Geno gets good, that's when you can get to that 7-win player. That's where you can get that 7-win spot, that 8-win spot. I honestly, guys, it's not too uncommon to me from the Giants team that made the playoffs a couple years ago. Now, everything broke Dable's way and Wink's way and Daniel's way that first year. I mean, that team had literally 3 or 4 win talent, and they still managed to make the playoffs just because they got hot and things bounced their way. The Lamar Jackson game, the Titans game, like, things just broke the Giants' way that year. That's kind of what you'd probably need to have happen for the Jets if they want to get to 8 wins or so.
Yeah, I guess where I was trying to balance this act is like, okay, that was a year where Kayvon had like a lot of closing sacks late. The Jet defense is where, Connor, I really don't believe in, and this is where I think it parlays into the offense. my expectation for the Jets is, while they have some of this raw talent, like I expect Bailey to be a player, whatever, but still his rookie as a pass rusher, they are going to inevitably, in my mind, be trailing, even in close games, in the fourth quarter a lot. And I think that's where Geno's warts are going to come in to kill this team. And I think that's where the turnovers are going to come in. So a lot of the reason I'm not buying into 8 wins is, while they might be fun on offense, how much of this is going to be them trailing in games where Geno's just chucking it up, and then it becomes a disaster scenario?
Yeah, I mean, look, the odds are in your favor. We're still at 80-20 here. So like, there's an 80% chance you're right.
20 just went on me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Like the 80%, it's, again, it's the 20% as it bounces the right way. Because you're right. There is a chance that the Jets are averaging, this probably seems high, but like say they average 23, 24 points a game. I could see the defense letting up 27, 28. I mean, I could see that happening because of the warts. Like, I really have question marks in their secondary. Like, I even with Dane Belton there, I don't love the safety spot. I do not like the corners at all. And I know they made some additions to the middle of their defense, but I still have real big questions of whether or not they're going to be able to stop the run. Like, I do. And David Bailey looks absolutely unbelievable. He looks like a star already. Already their best pass rusher. But who is rushing the passer opposite him? Because we have seen nothing from Will McDonald this summer. He looks like a fish out of water in this new scheme. And so, like, is Enabari really going to do it? Is Asai really? Is that your compliment? Like, if you're doubling Bailey and saying somebody else beat us one-on-one, are those guys really going to beat you for 7 or 8 sacks a year, which you're going to need to get pressure? Or is the run defense going to be so bad that no one can really pin their ears back and just attack, attack, attack? So I will say, like, the mentality of the defense has been a lot better than what I expected, and especially those joint practices with the Bucks. Like, they still didn't, if you want to say win-loss or joint practice, they still didn't win, but they competed. Like, they competed against a Buccaneer team that I think has a chance to be pretty good this year.
We're talking to Connor Hughes, Jets-Giants tomorrow. We know Geno's the starter, even if there was, like, that minute of fake controversy after the first preseason game. Is Cade Klubnik definitely the backup?
Unless they, I mean, they sure as hell can't go with the other two guys.
That's like, what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, if somebody, say, shakes free, and we were having this discussion on JFD the other day, like, say like Andy Dalton shakes free, the Eagles move on from that, or Tanner McKee, who I like a lot, and I think he'd work really well with Frank Wright, say he shakes free and he's there. I don't know if I'd go the Mason Rudolph route, or like if one of those, I don't think they cut Will Howard, but like say like one of those guys, I don't know if I'd believe in that, but if you have an Andy Dalton that shakes free and you believe in him, and you have Tanner McKee, who you like some upside in him, that's one where I could see you could bring that guy in, give it a couple weeks, and then by week 3 or 4, once they learn the offense, their quarterback too. But, I mean, we have seen nothing from Zappe that would make you feel confident in him making the roster, let alone being Geno Smith's backup. And the same thing with Brady Cook, even though we got some spot starts towards the end of last year as the Jets were, you know, free-falling and spiraling out of control. So, at the point, I think it's Klubnik. Now, if you're telling me Geno goes down and Klubnik has to start week 3 or 4, Jets are probably screwed, and that 20% dips down to like, you know, 1.5%, like with literally everything breaking their way to get to 8 wins. But if you're telling me you were not seeing him until November at the earliest or December, I think at that point Cade will have gained enough running the scout team and things like that where he could be a functional quarterback in lieu of when Tommy DeVito started early for the Giants, where it was like, yeah, look, this guy's not a franchise. No one had real ideas of Tommy being a franchise quarterback, but he went out there and you saw that he could function in an NFL offense. He's not going to win you games, but he can function. And I think you could get there with Cade by the end of the year.
And that's how they view him long-term, as probably just a backup quarterback?
Most people I talk to, yeah. I mean, look, I know that and I'm sure Woody's sitting there saying to himself, God, could you imagine if we got Dak Prescott here? And you know, we now are not paying a quarterback for 3 years or got him in the fourth round. Like, I'm sure they would love that. But you watch the guy, look, the way that I describe him, having seen that, again, I split time between Jets and Giants, but I've been at, you know, a decent amount of Jet practices here. He throws the ball well. He has a spot. The game is not too big for him. It's not a fish out of water, but I don't think I've seen anything in the preseason or in training camp that makes me think like, oh, this guy can be a starter. I think they look at this as like, look, developmental guy, we love him in the quarterback room, great mind for the game, going to be a great complement to whatever quarterback we have in here, whether it's Geno or we draft someone next year. Let's see if we can't develop him. Who knows? Maybe we flip him for a second or third round pick down the road. If not, worst case scenario, we have somebody that's like a second coach who can fill in if need be.
Are the Jets already doing their quote-unquote homework on Mike Tomlin? Any truth to that?
I mean, that would, I don't have any like sourced truth on that or any way, shape, or form, but I think it would be silly if like if you start playing out in your head how this season could potentially go and you might need a new head coach or might need a new this or you might need a new that, like I mean, Mike Tomlin's the biggest fish available. Like the Giants, I'm sure when things were going south with Brian Daboll, allowed themselves to think like, oh, maybe John Harbaugh is a possibility if he lets go. Now, will they enact on it? Is there actual interest in Mike Tomlin? No, but if the Jets are in a head coaching search after this year, it would be malpractice to not consider or look into Mike Tomlin.
All right, shifting over with Connor Hughes to Big Blue real quick. Connor, obviously Pat Leonard got beat up a little bit yesterday for the way he worded a tweet about Cam Scataboo and the Giants defense and Giants maybe being a little tired of his act. And then Harbaugh spoke after practice about Cam Scataboo and, you know, those penalties can't happen. Just cut and dry. Is Cam Scataboo getting a little disliked to the point this is a problem within the Giant locker room?
I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a problem yet, but the way that it's a I wouldn't call it a fight yesterday. It was a skirmish. Like, it was like, I've seen training camp fights. Like, there was one in the Jets one year, I'll never forget. It was like Lorenzo Maldon, and I want to say Kelvin Beachum. And, like, I mean, the offensive line moved, and you just saw Maldon over top of Beachum coming down with a haymaker. And it was, I mean, you see fight Jordan Jenkins versus Alex Lewis. A handful of the fights with the Jets and Buccaneers. Like, you see them. You see the fights when they happen. This was not that, but you could tell, and it's the kind of the way that I put it, like, this was a long time coming. And Pat was not, I think he wrote something similar in his tweet, but, like, he was absolutely accurate in that. I mean, guys, I remember, I think it was the second-ish day of the practices in West Virginia, padless, guys just in shells, and I remember, like, Cam ran pretty hard into the defensive sideline where all the defensive backs were. And as he's running back to the huddle, he's turning around and he is jawing at them. And we can't report exactly what was said, but he is saying things to them that would annoy just about any other man on the face of the earth. Like, insults that would, like, really, like, would get you punched in a bar, like that kind of a thing. So, like, I don't think that has necessarily stopped. And there's been little moments here or there, like, as training camp's worn on, where the defensive backs have started to give it. Now, he's not saying this to Reese or Abdul Carter. It's the DBs he's going at. Like, there have been little moments. Like, there was another time, I think it was 2 weeks ago, all these days kind of blend together. But again, padless practice, and Cam kind of, like, lowered his shoulder in the hole and took on a linebacker. And all of a sudden, the defensive backs are screaming at him and screaming at him from the side. So, like, it's been building. That's kind of what happened yesterday. Like, I think Pat said he fell into the knees. I didn't personally see that. Not saying Pat's wrong. I saw the aftermath, not that. But you could see them get up. And I remember looking at Duggan, who was standing next to me, and like, oh, here we go. Like, just what this is the boiling point. Like, this is all of the training camp practices brought into one. And sure enough, like, there was one little open hand to the face, I believe. Then guys immediately separated them. But I think that, like, look, fans love the screaming of the woo every time you get on the field. People love the backflips and all the attention. Yeah. But when you're the defense and every single day in the middle of August with the heat bearing down on you and you got to hear some guy just screaming woo on the top of his lungs every time he takes the field, like, you can see why as a defense you get a little annoyed by it. And then when that player is also talking trash to you, you can see why you get more annoyed by it. So I don't think this is like a locker room splitting thing yet or anything like that. I don't think it's major, but there's been a little rivalry going between the DBs and Cam literally the entire training camp.
When you look at that room, the running back room, it's fascinating. Tyrone Tracy to me was running back one, but he's had a kind of a not a bad camp, but he had two bad moments, really. The missed block that caused Jackson Dart in the blue 10, obviously the fumble. If you had to predict, and I know injuries are tricky, at the end of the season, which of these guys ends up with the most rushing yards on this team? Which one would you pick of the group that's there right now?
I still say Cam, and then I think Harris is too. I do. I mean, they don't. If you and also guys, if you look at this, like, the Giants have been trying to add to that running back room all year. Yeah. Like, this is, and I don't think they view Cam as like a wash away or throwaway player, but I don't necessarily think that this coaching staff, based on pretty obvious context clues, sees Cam Scataboo as like the workhorse back. I don't think they view that. Because if you thought Cam was the workhorse back, you're not trying to sign Kenneth Walker to a deal over $12 million annually per year. You're not trying and praying that Love falls to you in the NFL draft. And you're certainly not going out there when somebody goes down and adding Najee Harris. And no, Harris is not Love. He is not Kenneth Walker. He is not, I don't think, a running back runner in his own right. But he's somebody that says, like, dude, I should be getting 15 at least touches a game. So I think you could see a pretty close 50-50 split. And it would not surprise me at all by the end of the year or at points this year if Harris is out-repping Scataboo, because the Greg Roman, he wanted him in LA, and you can see that it might just be something where Harris fits what he wants pretty well. And John obviously is very familiar with him from his time Harris's time in Pittsburgh, his time in Baltimore. It wouldn't surprise me if that ends up happening, just to keep an eye on that one.
The easy question after the Calvin Austin injury is, hey, is Odell Beckham Jr. making the team? But I want to go past that. I kind of think he is, but my question would be, is Odell Beckham Jr. making the team to the point as the sixth wide receiver he's going to be active and involved in the game plan?
It's so funny you said this. So in the Giants media room, I sit next to Jordan. So like I said, like we were kind of just talking yesterday. I was like, you think Odell's active on game day? And my original thought is no. Unless something happens where they were to find somebody who wants to take Darius Slayton's contract, or I think based off of what I saw in camp yesterday, I think that Mooney is pretty safe. I don't think there's any world where they're trading him right now. I think he actually is the guy who slides right up into that slot position where you have Malachi Fields outside, Malik Nabers outside, and then Mooney is now your new slot, not necessarily Braxton Berrios. Then Berrios is your backup slot, punt returner, kick returner. Like, I think that's how it all shapes out. Odell doesn't play gunner. He really just works exclusively outside. Although he's done it in his career, he doesn't do it now. Punt returns, doesn't do kick returns. I struggle, unless you lose a Slayton or unless Mooney goes down, I struggle to see him being active on game days yet. I do. I don't see it at the moment. Now, could that change? Yeah, like I said, I think the Giants wouldn't mind getting out from Darius Slayton's contract, considering he's now basically like wide receiver four for them. But unless that happens, I don't see it at the moment. I don't.
Talking to Connor Hughes, Jets and Giants are not saying much about the plans for Friday. What's your sense? Do you think we see Jackson Dart? You think we see Geno Smith?
Geno, I'll answer it this way, because I actually haven't sent my, it's on my to-do list today, is to send out some texts and try to figure that out. But it's funny, too. Teams are actually being pretty guarded with that information, I think because of how much lines can switch with betting. So I think, think about that. I mean, a team announces, hey, we're not playing Jackson Dart this week, or we're not playing Geno, it's insane to think about, but there are betting lines to these preseason games, and they can swing pretty quickly, whether starters are playing, whether starters are not. In my opinion, Jackson needs to be out there. Not Malik, but like Jackson, the starting line, the receivers, they need to be out there playing, because there have been good moments from Dart, but it has not been a particularly great summer for him. He does look uncomfortable in Matt Nagy's offense, which is very pro style, not the college system that Dable was running, the 3-5-7 step drops, a lot of anticipatory throws and a lot of throwing on time and seeing things before they happen. And he just looks a tick slow. I mean, the Giants started practice yesterday with a red zone period, and Dart's first three passes weren't even close in the red zone. Like, they ran three plays in the red zone, all of them incomplete, and then the backups came in. So I think that he needs some time on task, and for him to have only played in the preseason opener and then basically taken a month off before he's on the field in a game setting. And I know there's a joint practices, but still a game setting. I don't think that would be wise. From the Jets' perspective, if you want to play the rookies, fine, but you saw Geno. You saw Geno last week. The guy has played a lot of football. He's 35 years old, right? I mean, I don't think he needs the reps like Jackson right now needs the reps. So if I was the Giants, I'd play my starters, and if the Jets, I'd probably sit them.
We got a record prediction for both teams?
Yeah, I'll say I think Giants get to 8 wins. I do. I think that the one thing about Harbaugh is they raise the floor. I do. I think he raises the floor of that team. And I'll say I have the Jets right now at 6. I think the Jets can get to 6 wins.
There you go. Connor, always great talking to you, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Connor Hughes does a fantastic job on SNY. He watches YouTube show about the Jets as well. And yes, yeah, they had a fun time, him and Zach Rosenblatt, debating the topic that you're getting credit for, but it was a caller. That pushed Garrett Wilson versus Malik Nabers.
I should ask Connor if he thought Lombard had a Hall of Fame trajectory.
Yeah. See where that's at.
Yeah.
Why don't you go and ask Sean Morris?
Oh, we already have. We'll get back to your calls in a minute. 888-808-1019. And we've seen so many major changes in baseball. Changes that if I told you 20 years ago we would see in the 2020s, you would think I was nuts. What's coming up next may be even bigger and more shocking.